This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Invest Talk. It is what? It's Thursday, August 21st. This is Invest Talk. We're heard every weekday, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 live in California, and live streaming online at investtalk.com. And, of course, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And, you know, you can listen to us anytime you want. The New York Times today is reporting that people are bored with investing. And I quote writer Conrad D'Anel from the Times. He says, rich evaluations and extreme bullishness may look like signs of euphoria, but other evidence suggests that investors are more bored than thrilled. Trading volumes in American stocks and some bonds, notably Treasury instruments, are close to their lowest level in the last 5 years. So volumes are way down. We know that. Then there's Chet Currier from Bloomberg, who says, the newest complaint against mutual funds is not that their fees are too high or that they don't beat the indexes often enough. It's that they are boring. Now, let me just tell you what. We are in the boring business. You want to be bored. Do you want excitement? Do you want the market to skyrocket up and then skyrocket down? You don't want that. You don't want that kind of volatility. How exciting do you want it to be? If you're going to get rich, you get rich slowly, not fast. Not in the stock market game. It doesn't happen. That's not what you want. You may think you want it. And maybe you're a trader. Maybe you're a short-term trader, day trader, swing trader. Well, then you want excitement. But if you're an investor, no, you don't really want that. So what money matters is on your mind today? We welcome you, especially if you're beginning listening in your journey of the life of investing. If you're a beginner, this is a good place to be. Our listener line is always open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can get through with your questions anytime, no matter what your money question might be. And I want to help you answer it if I can. So give us a call. It's our 24-hour listener line is always open, 888-99-CHART. We're going to go to John. John, San Francisco, wants to talk bonds and stocks. How you doing, John? John, you there?
Yep, hi.
How you doing?
Hey, so I have a question for you. So people say that there's, an inverse relationship between bonds and stocks.
Yeah.
And if so, I don't see it currently. So bond goes up, stock goes up.
Yeah, it doesn't.
What's going on?
Yeah, you know, we are in a very unusual times because of the Fed. The Fed has been so influential in its impact on the market that we're it's unusual. What normally happens is, see, there's a fight for money. We'll break this down. There's a fight for money between stocks and bonds. Historically, if the bonds yield much higher, that takes money from the stock market into the bonds. If the stocks are returning much higher, it takes money from bonds and people move into stocks. Well, we had a very large disconnect. Okay, large disconnect, what's going on here, where both stocks and bonds are going up. And interest rates are falling. That means bonds are going up. And people are buying stocks, too. What's going on there? And you're right, John, it's confusing because it's not normal. You will read, as you said you did, you will read that usually when stocks go up, bonds go down. And bonds go up, stocks go down. Because when interest rates fall, people don't want to buy those treasuries. But what's happening is that people are getting nothing on their CDs. The old guys like myself and older, we can't get any return. And we don't want to take a lot of risks. So we're both running to bonds and we're running to stocks instead of money in the bank.
Right. So one more addition there I want to add. So aren't the FOMC, aren't they kind of cutting back on buying the bonds? So if they're cutting back, like, who's buying them then?
Okay. Another very good question. Those are good questions, really good questions. What's happened is the Fed with the QE has cut from $85 billion a month. They were splitting it and buying treasuries and buying mortgages. And they've been cutting that $10 billion a month, and now they're down to, I think it's $25 billion. Okay, well, who bought the rest? Who bought the difference? At the same time they were selling, Chinese buyers started to come back in and buy. Now, why would they do that? Why would Chinese buyers all of a sudden, they've always been buyers. Don't misunderstand me. They've always been buyers. But they really cut down when QE came in because competition was, a big buyer, what's called the Fed in the market, was driving down interest rates, and China decided to stop or slow down their buying. And then when the Fed started to cut QE, China decided to speed up their buying. In the back of my head, I said, do they talk to each other? Is there some kind of agreement here? Because we've noticed the Chinese starting to buy a lot more bonds than they were before. Now, the Chinese have an interest in keeping our economy going, but I don't think it's that much of an interest because, they want to export to us and everything. But so it's been weird. But they are the ones who've stepped up, John, and started buying a big way. And that keeps pushing interest rates down.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, great. Thanks for the explanation.
Thanks, John. Appreciate the call. Yeah, I noticed that probably about a month ago, that what is the story there? You're just kind of curious as to, do they talk to each other? Because when the Fed started to cut back, China started to raise their purchases. 35% of older workers decided to leave their 401k money where it was following a job change. That's the easy answer. You don't want to do that. We talked about that yesterday, remember? Don't do that. You need to switch. There's four options that we talked about. And if you didn't catch it yesterday, you might want to go listen to yesterday's show. But don't leave it. That's the worst one. Today, we're going to talk about finding an investment strategy and sticking to it. Sticking to it. And it's very interesting. You read some of the older guys that have been around along and what they say. And that's what this article is about. I think you'll find it pretty interesting. I want to talk about that $16.65 billion settlement by Bank of America. In actuality, it was bigger than that. It was bigger than that. I want to talk about some of the details. Remember, I've been talking about banks and why I didn't care for them. Notice that this settlement, as soon as it happened, Bank of America stock popped up. Why would that happen? But we're going to talk about that. And I also want to talk about the AAII, American Association of Independent Investors, settlement. Every week they come out with a sentiment number, how they feel about the market. Are they bullish, they're bearish, they're neutral? And I think it's very instructive that we talk about that. And retail sales, payroll, and prices. I want to go over real quick, March, April, May, June, and July of each one of those. And you tell me what's happening, because it doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, you can try to figure it out, and I have some theories, but I'm not sure if they're correct. But I think we need to take a closer look at what's going on behind the scenes and why. And then let's look at the market today. The Dow was up 60 points. The S&P was up 6, new high for the S&P. The NASDAQ was up 5. Notice the NASDAQ was trailing today, and that's kind of worrisome. The Dow has been... The S&P has been the leader, and the NASDAQ 100 has been the leader, but not today. Just curious as to why that is the case. Anyways, that's what happened in the market. Remember, one day means very little, but it looks like we are recovering from the small pullback. It was a small in the major indexes, S&P 500, the Dow, the NASDAQ, about, 5% or so in most of July. First week in August, and now in the last couple of weeks, we've had a pretty strong bounce. And now the question is, it's now at resistance. Is it going to continue to break through? That's very, very possible. You know, and if it continues to break through, what do you do? Yeah, you know, that's the question, isn't it? Anyways, that's what's happening today. And you can try our personal risk analysis tool, by the way. It's there for you on InvestTalk.com. It's free. It's only a very few questions that you have to answer. And they're easy questions. None of them are personal. But they talk about how much risk you want to take. That's because it's a risk analysis tool. They say, well, if you would get a 10% gain, would you risk a 5% loss? Yes or no. If you get a 30% gain, would you risk a 20% loss? Yes or no. So it's kind of like four or five of those kind of questions to try to figure out what kind of risk you like to take. And then it sends it to me. And you get to see the score, too. It sends it to me immediately. And then what I do is I take a look at it, and I send you an email back saying, well, what kind of risk are you taking? This is the risk that you should be taking. I think you'll find it interesting. You just go take a look at it. It's free. You don't have to do anything about it. You can just take them free to see what kind of risk is from 0 to 99, 99 being the highest, 0 being the lowest. It's interesting to see what you think. If you think you're a risky person and you turn out to have a score of 35, well, guess what? You're not. Just go look at it. It's the free personal risk analysis on InvestTalk.com. And this is Invest Talk on Thursday. We're here to help you. Bring your money topic to me at 888-99-CHART. Will in Oceanside is up next.
As InvestTalk continues now, we remind you of some of the resources available to our InvestTalk insiders. Every market participant looks for signs of a weakening or strengthening stock market. Take a look at this short ETF list. It's yours if you become an insider. Sign up for free right now on InvestTalk.com.
And that short ETF list is for those people who want to hedge their portfolio against the stocks they want to hold on to. You know, you can hedge. You can make money when the market goes down by shorting. And you can do it in IRAs when you buy a short ETF. That's really a benefit for, you know, if that's what you want to do. Let's talk to Will on Oceanside. How are you doing, Will?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
I got a question here. I've decided to speculate a bit on Sprint.
Okay.
Figured it was so darn cheap I had to grab some. So I got 500 shares of that, which is not a whole lot of money when you look at the price of it.
No, $5.
Yeah. The second is the owner of the company is SoftBank, SFTBF.
Oh, yeah, big, large SoftBank, Japan bank and cell phone company, yeah.
Thinking about buying a bunch of shares of that. What's your ideas on that? It's on the pink sheets.
Yeah.
What would be a target price for something like that?
Well, SoftBank is not tracked by my software because it's a foreign company, not trading on any of the exchanges. You have to buy it through the pink sheets. And I usually tell people don't buy anything on the pink sheets, but SoftBank is a huge company. It's not some fly-by-night penny stock. It's not.
$35 a share or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there's nothing wrong with SoftBank, but I can't tell you if it's a good buy or a bad buy because I don't know the fundamental data on it. I can talk about Sprint. Wasn't Sprint who was the one that came out with the brand new pricing scheme that they have?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so because they're trying to gather more business because they're not growing. They're flat. I mean, we're talking about they shrank 1% in sales the last quarter. The quarter before that, they grew 1% in sales. But their earnings, they're making no money. They lost $1.24 a share in 2013. They lost 27 cents a share this year. They're going to lose it. Don't know yet for sure now. And next year, they're scheduled to lose 13 cents a share. So they're improving, but they're still losing money. So you're speculating. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Exactly. I'm speculating. That was the intent of this one. They're still one of the big four telecoms. So they have so much value.
It'd be hard for me to believe that they'll go out of business if that's what you're asking. And if not, and they survive, you'll do very well. You'll do very well. But that's your choice. Good luck with it. I hope it works for you. I really do. Symbol is S, everybody. 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast coming up on the next Invest Talk. How to pick the perfect retirement location. That's our talking point for the Friday, August 22nd podcast, and we hope you'll listen. And also, try our new free risk analysis tool. It can help you understand your tolerance for risk. Just look for the blue box on the homepage for a free personal risk analysis on investtalk.com. Invest Talk continues on this Thursday. How to pick the perfect retirement location. That's our talking point for the next program, and we hope you'll be here. Got a question today? Why not talk to Steve about it now? 888-99-CHART is how to get through to Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. You can reach me right now. Talk about anything financial. Finding an investing strategy and sticking to it. That's one of our main talking points today. What is a strategy? A strategy is like, well, I want to buy value stocks. I only want to buy blue chip value stocks that are large, safe companies, but when they go on sale, that's a strategy. Wait for they to go on sale. What does that mean? Well, when a recession hits, then I buy them and I just hold them. Or maybe you buy growth stocks and then you set up rules. I only want to buy stocks that are growing 20%. Sales and earnings per year, that's it. I'm a growth investor, and these are my rules. What the important thing is, establish some rules, and then stick to your rules. What I hear a lot is people have rules, they have a system, and then they don't apply it. You know, and it's very easy to get away from your system or your strategy. It's very easy. Because you convince yourself, oh, that it doesn't quite meet the rules that I have, but that really looks good over there. I'm going to go ahead and for it. See, or maybe you're a dividend investor. You better have some rules for that. If you're a dividend chaser, I think you're going to be disappointed at some point. Because dividends, too high dividends means something's wrong. That's all I can tell you. And what's too high? As you know, we have a rule. We don't like to buy a company that pays more than has a higher than a 60% dividend payout ratio. 60% payout ratio. That means for every dollar earned, they don't pay more than 60 cents out in a dividend. Now that's not applying to REITs, real estate investment trust, because they have to pay 90% out. They have to. But there's a benefit for that. I'm not getting into it. I'm just saying, if you're going to have a strategy, come up with a strategy and stick to it. Now, if your strategy is nonsensical, well, that's a whole different kind of question. We have to talk about that. Now, let's catch up on our 24-hour list line. Here's another question that came in between programs at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve and Justin. This is Bobby from Atlanta, Georgia, podcast listener. What's your take on AGCO? And overall, what's your take on the agricultural industry, like John Deere and this one? Looks like the industry is weak. So do you think it's a good time to buy AGCO, or shall I still wait for a further correction? Thank you. Bye.
Now, this is a value play, and commodities have been beaten up. Remember how for several years there, they were just running. Everything commodities was what to buy. And now we've been steadily falling for the last couple of years. And AGCO is AGCO Corporation out of Georgia. It manufactures agricultural tractors, self-propelled sprayers, and combines for the agriculture equipment industry. And their PE is now 9 because sales have fallen, and in the last two quarters, sales have shrunk, down 10% the most recent quarter, down 3% the quarter before that. Now, the quarters before that, it was growing 6%, 8%, 13%, 6%, you know what I mean, in that range, but not now. Earnings are falling 19% this year, and they'll fall another 5% next year. And as you know, traders will look ahead, and so the stock has been beat up because of that. It's down to $49.24. It's going to make $4.61 next year after $4.85 this year and $6 last year. So the question is what kind of value is a proper value for the company? Well, if $4.61, if you put a 9 PE, that's like $43, and it's at 49. If you put a, which I only say 9 is because that's what it's trading at now. A 10 PE would be 46. So your question is very valid. This would be a value play. If that's your strategy to buy value, this looks pretty valuable. And eventually, this will turn around because commodities will turn around. I do think you might be a bit early. But it's just a good, solid, you know, $4 or $5 billion company. You know, I would compare this company with Caterpillar, you know, and maybe John Deere. You know, Deere would be something that you would, you know, the same sector. You want to see, it does the same, the different stocks in that sector have better or worse numbers. John Deere, for instance, looks a little bit, very close to the same, very close. So all of them have been beaten up, right? So the question you ask yourself is, and you're asking the proper question, is it beaten up enough? And I would think I'd be a little bit more patient, but this is close. In other words, what you could do is you could put on a half an issue now, just a half of a position, okay, and see, because these are long-term buys. These are big blue-chip companies you want to hold on to. Every, you know, John Deere, $31 billion company, if you wanted to buy it, pays a nice dividend, 2.8, and if you're patient, the PE is 10. If you're patient, you'll do well, because it's fallen from $94 down to 86. That's not that much of a pullback, but pretty decent. In a recession, this stock got down to $24, $28 a share. That's what happens to it in a recession. So technically, you would love a recession to pick up something like this. But that's when everybody doesn't want to buy these stocks. I don't know why, but they don't. I have a new meeting date for Northern California. I'll schedule a one-hour individual retirement account reviews in San Jose on September 17th. If you'd like to schedule an hour with me, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Make an Appointment button there, and we'll work out the details.
You're listening to Invest Talk with portfolio manager Steve Peasley. How can you gauge your appetite for risk? Try the free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. That's our number. I'd love to talk to you. Bank of America, there was an announcement out late today of a $16.65 billion mortgage settlement by the Department of Justice and six states' attorney generals. That's the headline, right? But it's not quite right. It's $16.6 billion in cash, and then another $7 billion in loan balance reduction. So in total, it's going to cost about $23 billion. Now, that was with six attorney generals settling, six states settling. And these are problems. Remember, they bought Countrywide Financial and Merrill Lynch. These are where those problems are coming from. So the CEO said that there will be more settlements to come, but they will be smaller. Now, is that a lot of money to Bank of America? See, don't we all want to know, well, is that a lot of money? Well, let me try to give you some scale. Okay, that's about $23 billion, right? How much money did they make in the last 12 months? Well, how much profit did they make? Or how much money they're going to make next year, which is a lot more than they made this year and last year. Next year, they're going to make $1.50 a share. And there's $10 billion shares outstanding. So that's $15 billion of profits that they're supposed to make next year, which is about an 80% increase from this year. So they're going to make $15 billion next year, and they're paying out $23 billion for this settlement. So there goes all this year's profits, all next year's profits, and part of the year after in this settlement. And this was six attorney generals. Ha. The CEO said that the other settlements that are to come will be smaller. And this is the reason why I have not been very, one of the reasons, there's two main reasons, why I have not been very keen on the financial stocks. Now, Bank of America shot up today. Why? Well, it went from $15 to $16.16. Well, because this problem is now behind them. The stock has been not been doing well because these problems exist. If these problems were all behind them, then we could get a clearer picture. Are they actually going to make money? How much they're going to grow? But the other issue for the big financial institutions is that Dodd-Graham Act that we don't quite know what's going to happen. We don't know how much impact on their profits that's going to have. And this is why I'm not keen on these stocks. We have these unknowns that we won't know maybe another year. Remember I mentioned this the other day when someone called. I said, well, maybe another year from now we'll have a better handle on a better picture. Problem with that is by then the stock may have already run up. Who knows? It's not, you know, it's a $16 stock. It's going to make $1.50 next year. And you could say, well, gee, that's pretty cheap. And it is. But you also don't know what the costs are going to be. What are the litigation costs? We still don't know. Let's talk to Marina in Washington, D.C. How are you doing, Marina?
Hi. Well, I have a question about 401ks.
Okay.
I recently graduated from college 2012, and in the meantime, I've been putting in a fairly large percentage into my 401k.
Good for you.
Now, with the media, and there's been a lot of talk about there being a market correction going on. How do I try to protect my assets, the amount of money I've put in the principal I put into my 401k, considering it is in a 401k plan? Mm-hmm. How do I decrease the risk, I guess, in it and decrease how much I could potentially...
Now, there's a very good question. How do I decrease my risk in my 401k? Because are you fully invested in the market right now?
Yes.
Okay. So now there's several ways you can decrease a risk. One is to diversify over a broad spectrum. And you probably are not able to do that with a 401k because they probably don't give you a lot of choices. Do you know how many choices they give you to pick from in your mutual funds?
Our plan is pretty, I would say it's somewhat large, potentially it's from Vanguard.
Okay.
But in terms of asset classes, mm-hmm. we have like bonds all the way down to like emerging market, international stocks. But still we probably only have 30 options to where, if not a little more, to where we can invest our money. So.
Okay, so 30 options are actually pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. I've seen them with five options.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so 30. And I've seen them with unlimited, too. Any option, anything you want to buy. But there's ways first, if you're a young person, you sound fairly young, just graduated from college. And if a young person, what you want to do is just keep investing. There's mindsets. You can just keep investing, and when the market crashes, you invest more, not less. Because over the long haul, you will do fine. Now, if you want to be a little sharper than that, then what you could do, in most 401ks, there's a stable value fund. Do you have one of those? I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
Okay. That would be defensive. If you put like 20% or 30% today in your stable value fund, you won't make a lot of money, but it won't go down either. Okay, and so then that would hedge, we call that hedging, off some of the risk for all the other things you have. You can also, if you have maybe a gold fund, do you have a gold mutual fund in there somewhere, or a precious metal fund?
I would have to look into the funds a bit more to see if that is an option for us.
And the reason why I'm suggesting that is usually precious metals the different asset class called precious metals doesn't track with the stock market. So the stock market goes up, precious metals could go down. When the stock market goes down, precious metals can go up. It's not uncommon. Sometimes precious metals goes up with the market and sometimes it goes down. But in this environment we're in, most likely precious metals will go up when the stock market goes down. So there is another way to hedge. You can hold on to your S&P 500 index fund, but you can also put some of the money into the stable value fund and the gold fund, and that means you would hedge off some of your risk. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. If you want to talk about this more in detail, give me a call or send me an email and give me your choices, and I'll tell you which ones that you could hedge. You can send in an attachment.
Okay, that would be wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And you can get my email's right there on investtalk.com. So it's just it's pretty easy to send me something. Yeah. Appreciate the call, Maria. Very good questions. And congratulations to graduate from college, having a job, being able to save money in 401k. Not so easy these days. Not so easy. Time for InvestTalk 101, taking stock. For investors, it's always a good time to take stock of where we are and where we want to be and plan how best to get there. Marina was talking about that just now. First, make an assessment. That just means pulling out your banking and brokerage accounts and figure out how much money you have and where is it. Don't ignore questions. Don't ignore the assets and make sure you ask questions about what they are. Even if you're asking yourself, you have to understand what you own. There was a survey of 401k participants, and there was a huge percentage that had no idea what they were invested in. No idea. So you have to take stock of what you have. Then, how do you grow it? Are you participating in the 401k? Are you contributing? Are you contributing enough? And, you know, you have to understand your risk. How much risk are you taking in your 401k? And if you don't know, I can do it for you. You know, with our new risk analysis tool we have at investtalk.com, you can go in there and take the risk analysis questionnaire, which is 4 or 5 questions, to figure out how much risk you want. Send me your 401k portfolio or any portfolio. I'll put the portfolio in. And this piece of software I have that we're using will look at every individual equity, figure out how much risk is in those equities, and come out with a score. Just like you came out with a score on your personal questions of how much risk you want, put in your portfolio, give us a result of how much risk you're taking, and see if those two match up. Really kind of a neat tool. And that's on InvestTalk 101. You can do it. If you have questions on this topic or any other money matter, it's time to check in now at 888-99-CHART. Or making a personal note if you want. You can send me an email, and I'll respond back to you, I promise. Just click on the Contact Steve at InvestTalk.com.
Steve and Justin help you understand managing a portfolio's risk, breaking the risk barrier. That's just one of the recorded webinars that you can access anytime when you're an InvestTalk insider. Join up for free on InvestTalk.com.
888-99-CHART. Okay. By the way, just as a little side note, did you see that Russia closed down 4 McDonald's, one of the biggest ones in Pushkin Square, the biggest, the most busiest McDonald's in the world? They shut down 4 of them. Health reasons. It's health reasons. That's what they say. Now, there's 400 McDonald's, and 4 McDonald's shutting down is not going to affect McDonald's, okay, even though McDonald's has had issues. But I like to look at the bigger picture here, because we're having sanctions against Russia, and Russia is retaliating. And remember yesterday we talked about one of the things they're thinking about is not letting any Western automobiles be sold in their country. That would hurt Germany, or hurt Mercedes-Benz. So now Russia is using this, and it's common. Russia uses the health department a lot in its country to punish Western companies or their own companies or for political reasons, political enemies, food issues. That's what Russia does, okay? You just got to accept it. But I'm more worried about the bigger picture, because it doesn't look like it's de-escalating. Yeah, the fighting is de-escalating, but I'm worried about the economic result of these, of what's going on. Not here in the United States, between the EU and Russia. That economic picture, because EU has already fallen into recession. Anyway, AAII, bullish sentiment. You know who AAII is? Well, that's the American Association of Independent Investors. And these are a bunch of guys, that belong to this association. It's really kind of a neat association. I kind of follow them and like them. They currently are, they do bullish sentiment surveys of them every week. So you can track how, are they getting more bullish or less, more bearish, what? Right now, they're at, bullishness is at 46.11. Okay, that's up from 39.8 just a week ago. They're at 46. A really big jump in 1 week. Highest reading since December 26. Remember that date. Highest reading since December 26. Bearishness, 24%. Lowest reading since June, I don't know, some time ago. Okay. 33% neutral. Now, December 26. Remember what happened in January? Now, that doesn't mean it's going to happen. January was a 6% correction that we got, about 6%. January all the way, you know, was down. Historically, whenever the this is a contrarian kind of view. Whenever the AAII sentiment numbers come out and they reach 50% in bullishness, 50, or close to 50, or a little bit above 50, there's generally weakness in the market to follow. Now, does it follow the very next week? No. No, we don't know. It might be weeks, but it probably won't be months that this bullishness will be shaken out. And we also don't know how far down that will be. Will it be another little small correction like we just had? But what's interesting is it's pretty consistent. When it reaches 50%, the market weakens. It will weaken. So there's a bit too much bullishness out there. It's better to be bearish and the market's starting to turn up. Then you want them to be bearish consistently because the market will crawl up this wall of worry. It'll crawl up it because everybody's... But when they get so much... The reason why this happens is because when you have everybody bullish and you have individual investors bullish, individual people, that means they put all their money in. It's already in. All that money's out there in the market. So now you got to find new buyers to keep pushing up. Where you got to find that money? That's the interesting part. And remember, we reported earlier this week that a lot of insiders, their buybacks have fell 20% in the most recent quarter. Buybacks. So they were one of the biggest buyers of stock. So volumes is very low, but the market is still moving up. So obviously the market can still move it up on low volume. It's doing it. So you can't be negative just because of these things, but there's a lot of little red flags being waved. That doesn't mean, it's dire or imminent. Don't know when it's going to happen. Don't know. But those are pretty interesting stats. So you can see I got a lot of worries on my plate, right? I'm worried about a lot of things. We talked about China a couple days ago, and this is the third month in a row where their house sales down. You got the Middle East. Maybe that's calming down between Israel and the Hamas, government there and the West Bank. I mean, there's all kinds of issues out there, but the market, our market. This is the positive side. I don't want to be too negative. Positive side is our economic numbers look pretty good. They're improving. They're not getting worse. They're improving. They have been for several months. Not all bad news. Now it's time to get through. If you have a question for me today, call us now as we move into the final segment of the show, the hour that we have here together. 888-99-CHART.
Thanks for being a podcast subscriber. And even though you listen after our daily production time, you can still be part of the discussion. Your questions and comments set the tone and the topics. So please participate. Just call 888-99-CHART anytime. And if you'd like to talk live to Steve and Justin, just make that call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time. This is Invest Talk, 1 hour of conversation about your money. Talk to Steve about any money matter. We're moving into the final segment, but there's still time for your call, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, I want to go over some numbers real fast. So these are numbers that I want you to think about and compare them. And this is from, we're going to talk about March, April, May, June, and July. First talk, let's talk about the retail sales, okay, for each one of those periods. So March, retail sales was up 1.5%. Yay, right? March. And then April, it was up 0.62%. Then May, it was up 0.43%. And then June, up 0.24%. And July, 0.04%. This is retail sales. Down, high in March, then down, 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 down. Payroll. We've added jobs in March, 203,000. April, we added 304,000. May, we added 229. June, we added 298,000. And in July, we added 209. Every month, more than 200, and 1 month, over 300,000 new jobs. Okay, so shouldn't that tell you that retail sales should go up because you have people making more money? There's more people working. That unemployment rate went down. If more people are working, wouldn't that mean that the retail sales should go up? Well, maybe because was it having to do with inflation or prices? Well, if you're talking about prices, prices have been pretty consistent. Up 1.5%, 1.9%, 2%, 2%, 1.9% over those same months. Why is retail sales falling when more jobs are being created? I don't know. I don't have the answer. I don't know if anybody has the answers to that. I'm not sure why that's happening. And I want to apologize. I was supposed to do the show. I was supposed to be up in the Bay Area today. I was going to do the show for the Money Show in San Francisco, and I really was anticipating to do that. And I had plane problems this morning, and I couldn't get up there. It was very frustrating. And I apologize to the appointments I had to meet with people too. And I did that already, but I really wanted to be up there just for many reasons. Just couldn't get there. Let's talk to Dennis in San Diego. How you doing, Dennis?
I'm doing good, Steve. Your last thing, you said you didn't know why people were getting more jobs were being available and people were spending less, retail sales are falling.
Right.
My take on that would be that people are being paid less than they were back in the old days to do the same job. With even the slight inflation we've had in the last few years, certain things are up so high that I don't think people really have any extra money to spend on that you would notice in the retail sales.
Yeah, just real quick, was it last week I talked about payroll? And if you factor in inflation, as low as it is over the last 5 years, salaries have gone down. The buying power has gone down.
Correct.
But
that's my take on what, that's why you're not seeing a boost. And even though the jobs are coming back, people still don't have the money to spend because, you know, with gas, butter, bread, or whatever it is, the things they don't count,
yeah,
you know, when they do these.
Yeah, the things they exclude. I love it when they exclude inflation. Oh, they exclude food and energy. Can you and I exclude food and energy?
Yeah.
I don't know. So that's a very good point, and I agree with you on that, Dennis. Appreciate the call. And also, part of the reason is, you know, with these jobs being created, because my premise is, well, if you have all these jobs being created, shouldn't sales be going up? Because, right, they're making money. But a lot of these jobs are part-time, not full-time. And therefore, they're, you know, maybe these people are just getting on their feet and trying to get back the way they were, or trying to get their savings back up, you know, trying to pay off some credit card debt. You know what I mean? It's a variety of issues, I'm sure. But I look at it from a stock market point of view. I said, you know, retail sales is very, very important because our economy is, you know, 2/3 driven by the consumer. And that means consumer spending. What are they spending? So retail sales is a big part of that, right? Retail sales is a big part of the spending of the consumer, and that is going down. And that's kind of distressing for the future future growth of profits. We need that to turn around. Now, we've had economic numbers have improved recently, so hopefully we'll see that turn around, but it's been falling for months, retail sales. It's not a good trend. It's time to close for the day. I mentioned our new risk analysis tool. You can use it for free on investtalk.com. You know, and there's not very many questions, no personal questions. I think you'll enjoy doing it, actually, give you an idea. It will help you learn what your true tolerance for risk is. That's what we'll do. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. On behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at KPP Financial, we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.